in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
For the month, Christopher and I will be reviewing nothing but horror movies. This particular episode is a throwback to the old Foo Yuck days. Foo Yuck was a podcast that we had reviewed a great many great VHS throwbacks, including these three films, The Exorcist 1, 2, and 3.
Shaking. Do you think I should take her to a psychiatrist?
The problem with your daughter is not her bed. It's her brain.
Hey, I think we've got a guest.
You're gonna die up there.
Gonna feel a little stick here.
Why this girl? Doesn't make sense.
Please stop! Make it stop! It's burning!
You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
The sour is mine!
You know what she did?
You. 4 years ago, The Exorcist shocked the world. Now, the struggle between good and evil goes on. Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
Motion picture stunned our senses and uncovered our deepest fears in a way no film had ever done before. When it was over, we thought the terror had ended, but it had just begun. Morgan Creek proudly presents The Exorcist 3, Legion. Written and directed by William Peter Blatty, creator of The Exorcist.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Foo Yuck. This week's Foo is... We're actually going to do a mega short show.
Mega short show.
We're going to talk about the Exorcist trilogy. I do not look upon Exorcist 4 Dominion The ones done by Paul Schrader and Rennie Harland. We're not looking at those.
I didn't even know a part four existed.
There was a part four. It was a part four that came in two versions that were directed by two different people. Great production history there. We'll talk about that towards the end of the show.
But let me just introduce Chris Hassler.
Oh, sorry. So my name is Chris. I'm joined once again by my co-host, Mark.
Hello.
And it is a wonderful day for an exorcism.
Indeed.
We're going to look at Exorcist, The Exorcist. That's the first film. Exorcist II, The Heretic, which is going to be the litmus test of whether or not we're going to get along on this show.
Well, you know, we might not even get through the show.
All right. Here's the thing. What was better? What was a better viewing experience for you? Night Patrol or Exorcist II, The Heretic?
Night Patrol. No.
This is going to be a fun conversation.
No. Well, actually, I didn't really mind Exorcist II too much. I mean, I found it silly, but at least it was something that was kind of interesting, sort of. I don't know. I didn't really like 2 or 3.
What?
And yeah.
Exorcist 3. And you didn't like Exorcist 3 either. All right, we're going to get there.
Yeah,
we
have to go through it. And
so, I mean, let's start with the first film then.
I mean, this one I think we shouldn't even spend too much time on, except for the fact that it's a classic. Now, are you a fan of this movie?
I am. I love The Exorcist. And it's funny, but these three films are a prime example of foo yuckisms, and here's why. And the first one is exactly what you said. It's a classic, and everybody knows it's a classic, and I don't want to spend too much time on that one. Yes. I want to talk about Exorcist II, The Heretic, because everybody knows it, thinks it, perceives it to be like this abominable turkey of a movie, and I love it. I stand behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend this film to people who like film, you know, movies and certainly the technical aspects. I recommend it to people who like bad acting because it's got that too. I mean, it's in kind of a fun way, right?
I mean,
in a fun way, but also, I mean, I think it's a really good movie. The problem is it's not a cynical.
Well, let's go in order.
Redux, you know.
Let's go in order.
Okay,
so you have Exorcist One, which was released the day after Christmas in 1973.
That would be awesome to see this at Christmas time.
Well, right, yeah, I mean, right before New Year's, it's, you know, at the time it was the biggest hit for Warner Brothers. So, which tells you. That is why they immediately wanted to create a sequel. Sequels weren't really that common at this time. I mean, they were just becoming common.
Should we do a quick capsule summary of the plot? Girl gets possessed, needs to be exorcised.
The end.
Yeah.
Gets exorcised is fine, sort of creepy at the end. But it's based on the novel by Peter Blatty. He was a well-known screenwriter in Hollywood, and do you know he actually co-wrote The Pink Panther?
I might have stored that somewhere in the back of my mind.
He was kind of in a writing slump, and he read an article from 1949 based on an actual exorcism, and he wrote the book. So that's really the whole gist of it. I also read, and I don't know if you're a big fan of his, but Kubrick was considered as one of the directors at one time.
I did not know that.
Imagine a Kubrick. You know, it would have been just kind of, I don't know what it would have been, actually.
It would have been Shining.
And you have William Friedkin. What was his name?
William Friedkin.
Yeah, he had just gotten like amazing great success from The French Connection, so he was kind of carrying that over with him. And I'm kind of looking through my notes.
Did you read any I sent you Friedkin's
what you about know, I only had a chance to really flip through it. I really want to read that straight through. I don't want to flip through it. Every time I open it, I'm finding some cool stuff.
And the films that, you know, he's known for are worth reading up on, like French Connection, the background on that, the production on that, The Exorcist, Sorcerer, which is a film we should put on our roadmap at some point, Cruising, which is a film we should put on our roadmap.
Cruising, was that with Tom Cruise? No.
Al Pacino?
Al Pacino. I don't know why I keep thinking of a different movie.
For me, the book didn't work because Friedkin does not talk about Deal of the Century with Chevy Chase at all. Like nothing, like no, not even a passing reference.
Like as though they edited it out.
I was like, ooh, was there behind the scenes clashes with Chevy Chase?
Of course there were. You know, there was. I mean, Chevy Chase is notoriously a difficult person to deal with.
I've heard that. Like he's having trouble on, he got himself fired from Community, didn't he?
Oh, did he? I didn't know.
I don't think he's on it anymore. Maybe I'm mistaken about that.
I stopped watching it. So it was funny for a period of time. I just kind of lost interest.
So, I mean, even with the intervening years, like from 73 to now, when some of the demon possession cliches, which were fresh back then, have become cliches since then. This movie is still like creepy, and it freaks me out sometimes. I mean,
I think the makeup is really cool. It's very scary.
It when the head spins around.
Yeah, and you know that it was a doll that was created in Linda Blair's image, and in the Museum of the Moving Image in Astoria, New York, you can actually visit the doll.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they have the life-size doll.
Museum. You keep mentioning
that. It's an incredible place. They have a number of incredible artifacts from the history of Hollywood and film.
I love the way that Friedkin films this. I mean, he films it totally in kind of a quasi-documentary style. It's not – I don't think it's Hollywood glamorized at all.
The whole movie has an atmosphere that I think is one of the scariest aspects of the movie. House feels creepy.
The stuff when Reagan is being hospitalized and picked at and probed, and I mean that's kind of creepy too.
Very.
I mean, it's just like ugh.
Yeah, and there's a very there's a lot of cold scenes where you just. Like, there's no flowers, there's no pretty decorations in the background to make you feel better. Like, when you go to Reagan's room, and they have, like, the blankets wrapped around the footboard, and all of this kind of creepy, you know, stuff, you really feel like this is an evil place. And I think that came across very well.
And like you said, I mean, the makeup on Reagan just, to this day, and I'm a middle-aged... I don't believe I just said that. Middle. I mean, it still creeps me out. The voice, and some of the things that Reagan does, like with the crucifix, and she's jamming her anything. Anyway,
but you know, even like the priest, you know, the priest is questioning his own belief in God. His mother passes away, and it becomes worse. He doesn't want to be a priest. He doesn't want to be a psychiatrist. And when his mom dies, he's completely lost.
I totally, you know, I used to be, when I was younger, I was like, oh, let's get to the possession stuff. But I actually love his spiritual...
Yeah, his turmoil. His
Catholic guilt that he has.
Sure.
I mean, I really, really like Jason Miller. He plays Father Karras.
Mm-hmm.
I love him in this. I love he just brings a very gravitas to his Catholic guilt over his mother. That's really that I associate with.
Well, I think we could both agree that Exorcist was a great movie. If you are going to see this movie, try to see the version you have never seen, which is what it's called. It has an additional... I'm sorry.
It has even more creepy scenes, including everybody knows... Again, everybody knows about this, too. The spider walk down the stairs, which freaks me out to this day.
Right. And it has an additional 13 minutes.
And some of it is dialogue and, you know, there's the end coda at the end where Kinderman, the detective, starts talking with the priest who is a friend of Karras. And I don't know why you needed that, but whatever.
Well, the movie did it very well. Very, very well. So obviously they thought, let's make a sequel because let's not let the gravy train run out. They originally had Blatty come up with an idea that was called Legion, which, you know, and William Friedkin didn't like it. Blatty had written a book about it afterward and had done well, and he kind of released it under the assumption that this is really what the sequel to The Exorcist would be. But they didn't go for it, you know. It's
so actually what they wound up making was not, like I say, it's not a cynical Exorcist redux, and we'll get to Exorcist 3, which is from Legion, which is taken from the novel.
One more quick thing is, you know, Warner needed Blatty to sign off on all the final cuts. And he was so sickened, I guess, by the fact that William Friedkin was not going to use his original idea that he waived his involvement in the entire production.
Really?
Yeah.
So you have been doing some research here.
A little bit. I had to do something during Exorcist 2 and 3.
So
Snoresville. All right, I'm sorry. Go on. Did you know Linda Blair didn't want to do the sequel?
What?
Yes, she did not want to do the sequel, but said that they had written the script and it was so good that she couldn't say no. The rewrites made the film worse and worse and worse. And by the time she tried to bail out, even at one point, but she was already signed on and it was too late, which is what I think happened to her over and over again. Night Patrol.
So Exorcist 2, directed by John Borman, starts with Richard Burton playing a priest who has similar questions of faith, who is called upon to strangely investigate the circumstances of Father Marin's death, which happened in the room during the possession.
Right.
And he goes to meet with Reagan, who's now under the care of a psychiatrist.
And she looks great, by the way. She's the shining example of, like, late 70s, hot chick, you know, very curvy at this point. You know, she's grown. She's a woman now.
She's pulchritudinous.
She never looked better, actually, I think.
Roller Boogie. But anyway.
I never saw Roller Boogie.
It's on the roadmap. So she's under the care of a psychiatrist, but Reagan claims not to have any memories of what happened in Washington. So the psychiatrist brings out this device.
This magical device. This is where it starts turning into science fiction for me.
It allows two people to get into a mental sync and enter each other's minds, or enter into the minds of one of the participants.
Now, imagine, if you will, them superimposing each other's faces and the old exorcist face over hers because she refused to do the makeup, actually. And they got somebody to play her that doesn't look anything like her. But do you remember, like, they would go, like, they would do the thing in and out, you know, like, the fade. It was like a bad 40s effect or something.
Wow, I loved that stuff. I loved when Burton goes into sync with Reagan and sees inside the room during the possession.
And I love the concept. I thought it looked horrible.
What? So yeah. Just the frame. I mean, the production design of that. I mean, there's so many shots in here that were just awesome. Awesome.
Okay. I mean,
it'd be hard to explain, but I mean, so you have Reagan and Tusk and the psychiatrist. Now, the psychiatrist had gone into sync with Reagan, and something, you know, she's having a heart attack. So Reagan takes off her thing and puts it on Burton. And so Burton is going down to where Tuskin is while Blair, you know, says, help, help Dr. Tuskin. And she's holding Dr. Tuskin. And so this vision comes of Merrin on the side of Reagan holding Tuskin with the evil Reagan, the possessed Reagan, again, in the room on the other side. And they're both holding Tuskin and they're both fighting for Tuskin. And oh, it was just – it's a beautifully, beautifully filmed idea. You know, I mean, it's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea. I don't like the way it was implemented personally.
Oh, you're
how now, about, you know what? You know what I think was great? Now, Dr. Tuskin was played by Louise Fletcher, who played, as we all know, Nurse Ratched.
Ratched.
And I think that she's one of the creepiest, coldest characters in film. One of. She's the kind of person that just really creeps me out. And I just heard this great interview with her on NPR talking about that character. And she, I thought, was great in this. I really enjoyed seeing her in this because she was still relatively young. And there was a lot of a connection there. I think that the actors were pretty good and they tried. I think
even
that
Burton? Really?
To a point.
I think he's nursing a 5-day bender throughout the whole movie. And he can barely, you know, he
if
can
I watched
barely,
it again, maybe.
He looks totally confused. I know that's kind of like the character, but it comes across as Burton.
No, you
just
know,
being confused as an actor rather than the character.
Now, what was up with Dr. Tuskin's office?
It was Wasn't that awesome?
No, I think it was like
design wise.
Yeah, I felt like it was a thrown away set from, you know, 2001 or something.
And I'm not sure. So she's a psychiatrist, but you know, she's helping deaf people. She's helping.
If you want to watch in the background, I don't know if you noticed this. You have all these kids in the background in the different rooms, and they keep pushing this huge bolt or a nut back and forth. Did you notice this at all? It's like a huge octagon, like, nut. Like, you know, and it's like five of them are just going back and forth, pushing this thing. And, you know, it's like about a good 5 or 6 feet high. Did you notice it?
Did you notice one of the kids was Dana Plato from Different Strokes?
No, I didn't. That's awesome.
She's the one where Reagan, she has the power for good and for evil, and she uses the good side to get into Dana Plato, who's autistic, and gets inside her mind and starts her talking.
How did I miss Dana Plato on this?
Because she's really young.
Wow. Good call on that, by the way.
And that's what the movie's about. It's about...
Are you sure? I don't even see her name here.
No, I'm
there
talking.
She is. Yeah, you're right. She plays Sandra Valor. She's uncredited.
I don't think... Does she have a name in the...
Yeah, Sandra Fallor.
And so that's what it turns out, that Reagan can be a force for good, or because she can be... Because she has this healing power. In fact, the film opens in... Where was it? Ethiopia, was it? Or, no.
Africa, I believe.
South America, where Burton is doing an exorcism that has nothing to do with the rest. It does have something to do
with it. Yeah, it's the same demon, right?
Right. And she says, why me? Why me? I heal the sick. And then she throws the candles all over and starts burning. What'd you think of that effect?
I don't recall it. It didn't really make an impression. I'm sorry.
So it was just amazing how they did. I mean, the again, production design, awesome. And so again, that's the theme where these people who have the ability to heal or have great goodness, they bring the demon onto them because of that. So
you're making a very good point on a lot of what you're saying. I did find a few things that I liked about the movie. I didn't completely hate it. Like, for instance, I like the whole science versus religious aspect. I think that could have gone a lot further.
Yep. Burton spouts a few things about how what Tuscan is doing with the synchronizer, for instance.
I did think, you know, for the most part, acting was... It was weird. It's like sometimes I'm thinking in my mind... When they were in the office with the psychiatrist, Tuscan, they seemed like, you know, decent acting when it was going on in there. But the other scenes, it was just pretty much, I don't know, very forgetful. The whole movie felt long and it felt uninspired.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. I mean, it's just the way I feel, you know? And you know what? I think that my opinion goes along with a lot of other people's opinion because the movie was a complete flop.
I don't know. I don't want that.
Flop.
It did not make the money the first one did.
It killed the entire Exorcist game plan.
How many different stories can you do anyway?
A ton of them you could do. Demon that goes to person. They're doing it now.
Especially when you see the sequels, the subsequent sequels, especially number 4. Times 2.
Yeah, but this is years and years before that. We're talking over a decade. You know, more than a decade had to pass before they went to part 3.
This is the 70s when people actually took chances on sequels and did something, well, kind of. Sometimes took chances and did something a little different. And I love that about this film. And I don't know. I think it has equal parts greatness and equal parts badness. I think some of the acting is funny.
Now let me ask you. Yeah, I mean, there's Richard definitely
a couple of great mellow, so melodramatic lines that mm-hmm. kind of campy that we should use as, and I can direct you to where they are, but just beautifully campy things that you can't help but snicker at.
Well, we should make like maybe a piece, like maybe a best of for each episode, movie.
I don't know if you remember, but on one of the blogs that we blog on, there was a question of the movie needed more tap dancing because
scene
in the movie where Reagan is tap dancing and then has a possession.
Yeah.
So I said, depending on which cut you see, there is actually more tap dancing. And the version we watched is actually the original theatrical release.
Okay.
That was subsequently this thing was pulled from theaters because people just wanted the same old thing. They weren't ready to be challenged, I guess.
Well, you know, John Borman pulled it out of theaters twice to recut it.
Yep. And he added, you know, things were sequenced differently. I mean, I could probably write a book about this, but you know, they started the next iteration of it started with a narration by Burton that sort mm-hmm. of recounted what happened. And he says, and so, and 4 years later, I climbed a mountain in South America, and it actually. Whereas the version we watched started inside already while he was just about to start the exorcism, this started while he was walking up to the little hut he was going to. And again, the production design, beautiful. And there are other things like at the end, Burton, in a version we watched, Burton somehow lives mm-hmm. from the disintegrating house. And that's again where the bad acting comes in.
Also, James Earl Jones, worst role he's ever done.
But here's the amazing thing: James Earl Jones retains his dignity even when he's dressed like a grasshopper.
He's like crazy.
But that's one of my favorite scenes where Burton has to prove his faith in Jesus Christ, and he has to walk across the spikes coming out of the water.
And see, then at this point, I hated the movie.
He goes through the spikes, but he wakes up somewhere differently, and he's waking up from his despair.
You see, know what else?
It's deep.
There's a feeling that the first Exorcist had. There was a certain level of claustrophobia. There's a certain feeling. The sets are beautifully chosen.
When they
this
go to
movie,
Africa?
It's like anywhere where they are, they're just filming it. The Africa shots are different. The when they filmed in Africa, it was very, very well done, I felt.
Oh, yeah. And some of that was on the stage.
But it was
beautiful.
Just... The movie didn't make any type of connection with the first movie, I felt. Could have been a very independent movie. This movie had little to nothing to do with the first movie, and I felt the same way about part three. I felt as though, aside from making references, it had nothing to do with it.
Okay, well, you want to go to... Let's go to part three. Let's just introduce part three, which was...
Well, also, what was the last thing you saw Linda Blair in?
If you don't mind me asking. Blair. Yeah. Like, recent? Like,
yeah, like, what do you remember her in? Like, a Network Stars thing? Was she ever...
Oh, shing.
I wonder.
I think she's, like, some of my most favorite movies. She was in How Many Women in Prison flicks. She
but
was
recently.
In...
I mean, I'm looking here.
Oh, recently.
I mean, she was in a... She's going to be in a TV movie called Whoa. And that's what, you know, that's the review, too, probably.
Oh, zing.
She does a lot of TV.
You would think she's been on, she must have been on something like.
She's done nothing since 2008.
Nothing?
Nothing.
I think she has a horse farm or something. She raises horses or something.
Like, did she make bucks from this movie or not? I mean, she was kind of young. I mean,
from Exorcist 2?
No, nobody made money on that movie.
I think she was dating Billy Idol at the time. And,
really?
No, I don't know.
I'm like, I didn't read that. So part three, it's 20 years later.
Written and directed by William Peter Blatty. Based on his, like you said, he wrote a novel called Legion, which I have read, but I don't remember much about. I do know that the film follows the book very closely.
It also ignores the fact that Exorcist 2 ever happened.
It does.
And in my opinion, if you're a big fan of Exorcist, you should go to 3 immediately. And if you want filler, to just kind of to be a completionist... Go to 2. I just feel this way because I did not like 2, and by the time I got to 3, I was kind of fed up with it.
Ouch. So what did you – all right, let's introduce 3 first. So in the original Exorcist, the detective Kinderman was played by Lee J. Cobb. Now he's played by George C. Scott, who I think is good in this movie.
Me too.
He's got some great lines.
This movie is a big step up. In the sense of the way it looks and the way it feels.
I disagree.
You don't like the slickness, I'm thinking.
I don't. I like that. Well, let's just quickly.
But it's 1990. You have to just remember.
No, I know. It's a different audience. Yeah. I know.
No, I mean, even the way it looks, the way they're shooting it, the type of cameras.
Actually, you know, I mean, I do like a lot of The Exorcist 3, but the stuff that's I don't like about it is really worse than anything that's in Exorcist 2.
Also, this movie was so overdramatic in some of these friggin' long-winded
dialogue scenes.
Oh my god, it was like... Oh
right, when
god.
George C. Scott is talking with his priest friend after George C. Scott is investigating the death of a boy who was crucified on some oars. And it you know, it is kind of creepy where his head was taken out, or his head was, he was decapitated, the boy.
Right.
But he was injected with a drug, so he saw everything happening and felt everything that was happening, but couldn't move. And so that is kind of creepy. Mm-hmm. And so George C. Scott is having a question of his faith and is talking about it with his priest friend, who he always goes to movies with, kind of like the original.
Yeah,
that's what happened sort of at the end of The Exorcist. Like I mentioned, it was the scene that started that friendship.
Right.
And you're right. I mean, like, that scene goes on too long. And
the whole movie seems very long.
It does. It does. And
I actually really had to... I fell asleep a couple times watching this movie. I found some of the dialogue was just so bloated that I would have to rewind it and watch it again because my mind just wandered. Like, what did he just say?
And it comes right from the novel, and so it really feels clunky when you just put that kind of, like I say, heavy-handed, obvious, here's our theme kind of dialogue front and center. I mean, it was just like, yay.
And also Brad Dourif, the Gemini Killer.
Wait, so...
No, I'm just curious. Did he play Billy Bathgate? I'm sorry, you can go on. I'm looking up the history.
So, as it turns out, George C. Scott's priest friend is in the hospital, and something happens to him. And so now George C. Scott is investigating around this hospital, and it turns out that there's a special patient kept down in the crazy farm that's kept in the basement where they have all the oldsters and old, you know, old senile people,
mm-hmm.
but also some mentally deranged people. And it turns out that it's Father Karras is in one of the cells, and he's been possessed by a serial killer called the Gemini Killer. And apparently what happens, and it's great when Jason Miller is back as Karras, because his voice rivals the original Exorcist Devil voice.
I really like Jason Miller a lot. I thought that he did do an excellent job, and he actually died only a couple years after this.
Yep. But what happens is they only had him for a short time in the schedule. So when George C. Scott is interviewing this Karras person, he suddenly switches to the persona of the Gemini Killer in the person of Brad Dourif, who is terrible in this.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he cannot... I'm surprised I'm saying this, because Brad Dourif is usually good at playing kind of crazy, eccentric, but he is way over the top, way out of his league. He's always yelling and ranting. It feels like high school play. He's not scary whatsoever.
No, it's like a high school play. It's over dramatic. It's like,
and it's so,
oh, I'm sorry. Am I scaring you? You know who I thought would be better? Or next time you watch it, think of Jim Carrey. And that's exactly who he looks like.
You're right. Yeah, no, actually, you're right. If they had kept Jason Miller through that, it would have been so much creepier. But once they started doing that, once Brad Dourif shows up and starts with these long scenes of just the two of them talking.
Long scenes that don't really move. I mean, these are like...
And
5 minute camera shots.
And exposition, and here's the explanation, that when Karras jumped out the window, he was possessed, if you remember,
mm-hmm.
and killed himself by falling down the stairs. The Gemini Killer was also
killed the same night.
And so those greater beings, the devil or whoever, thought it would be funny if we put the Gemini Killer into Karras' body and torture him that way, so that Karras has to watch every time the Gemini kills. I mean, it was such a stupid, stupid explanation.
But it made so much more sense than two to me.
No.
Yes, I disagree.
There's clunky, and there is ambitious and visionary, and 3 is clunky to the extreme. It's got some great. Here's another bad thing about Exorcist 3 that is actually kind of. You said it was 1990, and you need to give the audiences something different.
No, I didn't. So that's not why I said. In 1990, I just felt as though for the period between, like, say, like 1988 and maybe 1993, maybe to 95, the movies were much slicker.
Okay.
The look, the overall look. No, the quality of the movie itself was, if it was made in 1990, chances are it will be dated, no matter what. It's just probably usually an awful movie.
And so, I mean, one of the funniest scenes has George C. Scott having a dream where he's in Grand Central Station, which is meant to be the way station to the afterlife.
Yeah, that was pretty stupid.
And so you see Fabio is there with wings and...
Yeah, I thought, hey, why
is Patrick Fabio? Ewing had wings. And, all right, I think it ends because he is walking through this way station to the afterlife and comes across his priest friend. And it's at that moment that the priest is being killed. So it was just equal parts absurd and kind of cool. But I remember I went to the theaters to see this, and between that, which was kind of funny, and the Brad Dorff scenes, which were really funny and annoying. I mean, it's not, I prefer 2 much more.
No, I didn't like this movie, but I liked it more than part 2 because I felt as though at least it made sense on some level. Bottom line is I felt like this was just kind of a police thriller with kind of a side order of Catholic satanic gibberish.
And no. let's make mention that there is a hastily edited in exorcism.
Because you had to have one.
And how cheap did that look? I mean, it just looked so ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you know, the ending was changed. The ending was changed last minute. And Blatty wanted to do a director's cut in 1996. When he went to Morgan Creek, which I believe
is the production
house or whatever, they said the footage no longer exists. It was destroyed or it was discarded, whatever. So how crazy is that?
Yeah, we know that's going to come back. It's going to come back. We'll see it. We'll see the director's cut. There's actually, I read where there's a fan edit on the internet where they took out the exorcism scenes and just kept it as near as they could without any, you know, any of that lost footage and just kept Blatty's original intent. So I was actually started to look for that because I was kind of curious.
I feel bad about saying this. Because you like Exorcist 2 so much. But I just felt as though if Exorcist existed without the sequels, it would have been just such a more powerful film.
I think it stands up no matter what. I think the Exorcist, the original, stands up even with the sequels existing, but also with all those cheap imitations that came out, like the Italians did it.
Right.
Americans did it. I mean, everybody was ripping off the Exorcist.
Turkey did it. Remember, there was a Turkish exorcist. You know, this was also one of the most parodied movies throughout the 80s and late 70s. Well, all of 70s.
And it's still, I mean, it's still a
pea soup, you know. It's
scary, creepy. I mean, it really, you know what, you want to hear a funny story? Actually, after watching these films the other day, my daughter, I you know, I woke her up because we had to get ready to go to soccer or something.
Right.
And she was like, "Daddy, I kept hearing knocking during the night." And I was like, "Whoa, you're creeping me out." And
right.
She's like, "Yeah, I kept going like that, going knock, knock, knock." And of course, for a minute, I was like, "Oh, shit." But then it turned out, you know, of course, it was just the heat. And
oh, okay.
My heat was coming on.
And how cold is it up there? Jeez. You have your heat on already?
My wife needs heat. I don't need heat. I still have the air conditioners in the window, so.
Yeah, we have the little digital Nest thermostat, and our house is still, like, in the walls between 68 and 71 degrees on its own.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I don't... My wife is just crazy.
Yeah.
But I was like, if my daughter started talking about tapping on the walls in Captain Howdy, I was out of there.
Podcast.
I would have to contact On the Odd.
Yeah. Which is actually a really good podcast.
So just to quickly make mention, there is an Exorcist 4, if you will. It was filmed twice, once by Paul Schrader, which you would think it would be good, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then once by Rennie Harlan, which you wouldn't expect to be good, and it wasn't. So, but it's the production history of that, about why they hired Schrader and then disregarded his version because it didn't have the what audiences want. You know, it was a more thoughtful film. And so they hired Rennie Harlan to do a re-edit or another version, basically, which was more action-oriented and had more scares and jumps.
Yeah. You know, the first movie didn't have so much of that, really.
It didn't. It all came towards – it all started slowly, you know, and sort of built to the final – you know, the final segment of the film where Karras comes and interviews Reagan, who's clearly disintegrating, you know, yeah. Clearly possessed.
The pacing of the first movie is just beautiful, I think.
Yep. Yep.
It really does slowly happen, and they don't rush it. You know, and the movie can feel a little bit long, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great film.
Yeah.
There's not more you can say about that one.
Great. So I think another one, another Foo Yuck is in the can.
If anybody else wants to talk about Exorcist II the Heretic, please write us at, you know the address.
Well, actually, we have a hotline phone number. So if you want to call in.
Do we?
We do. It's 516-308-2397.
I really want to hear what people think. Good. Bad or indifferent about Exorcist 2. I already know what you think about The Exorcist, I'm sure. Even Exorcist 3, I'm kind of curious what people think about that. I think it has some great scenes in it, but ultimately it's not The Exorcist 2.
And if you call in, you say some good stuff, I'll definitely play it on the podcast. So you make it to the podcast.
You know you want to be here.
Indeed. All right, well, Christopher, thank you very much for getting together tonight.
Do you want to talk about our other podcast real quick, just to get people...
Sure, for your consideration. It's A Fistful of Cables production. Go to iTunes, search for Your Consideration. It's TV pilots and maybe, in the future, finales. I like the idea of pilots and finales.
It can work.
You're not too crazy about that, I think.
We have to pick the shows carefully.
Another podcast I do, it's really a new show, really. It's called On the Odd, and it's basically talking about all of these type of things like exorcisms and paranormal things that maybe you're not too into, Chris, but maybe you will get into soon.
Nope, I have it downloaded. It's going on the iPod for my commuter train tomorrow.
Cool. It's not that interesting. We're new. It's only 3 episodes. So definitely come, you know, check out On the Odd. And
don't listen to it in the dark.
Yes. Don't. And, you know, we have a bunch of different podcasts coming soon. A music podcast, which I think should be a lot of fun, called Hot Biscuit. And all types of other ones.
Stay tuned at FooYuck for further developments.
Yes, subscribe to this podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Have a good one.